We are ready for this, and everybody turn in their questions.
Okay. All right, we're going to go around the room.
Where do we start?
We don't dig it out yet.
Yeah, we pull them out as we go.
Set it at his feet. There you go.
37?
Make him stand up so I can hear.
No cheating for the test.
37. Guys, y'all, when you pull a question, stand up here so that way the recording can catch what you say.
And don't read the question.
I'm not reading the fucking questions. You're alive.
Keep an eye on him.
I might just make mine up.
We know.
She made it. I'm waiting for it.
Here we go. This is not a question. Sponsorship. If you don't have one, you're listening to the last person that talked you into fucking your life up. Thank you very much.
He was JW and he's an addict.
This one's even better. It's Blake.
Oh, pray.
Yeah, let's do that.
Pray.
Thanks, Jim.
I'm JW and I'm an addict.
Thanks, JW.
And Ryan's my grand sponsor.
Lucky you.
When is it time to give up on a relationship with someone who isn't in recovery? When do I stop fighting? I've got an answer to that question, too. I've been in more than one relationship with people that weren't in recovery, that was still using, and it didn't work out too good. They kept disappointing me over and over and over. And I kept showing up expecting things to be different. What I didn't realize at the time was that I was in a relationship with a disease, not only in them, but especially in me. And so I went to my sponsor's house, and his wife asked me, can you accept her just the way she is for the rest of your life? And I said, no. And she said, well, you need to end that relationship. And I said, well, why would I want to do that? I think she's about ready to straighten her ass up, you know? And then that sponsor relapsed. He actually broke his wife's arm too, so that was kind of a messed up relationship anyway. So I got another sponsor, and sometime later had another wife that wasn't acting right. And you see a reoccurring theme here. And so I was bitching to him about her, and he said, well, what was your part in that? I did not have an answer. Probably one of the most profound questions he's ever asked me in my whole entire life. And he hung up on me, and so later on I called and said, I haven't packed my shit yet. And he said, that's not the answer. Hung up again. And I went to a meeting that night, and someone shared about unrealistic expectations and ourselves and others. And I get real emotional about that because that ain't what I wanted to hear. I wanted her to straighten her ass up so I could be okay. And from that day forward, I may see what that other person is doing, but I have to look at where I'm at, and because that's the only thing I can change. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
an addict named Tim.
Hi, Tim.
How do you deal with complacency in recovery? Wow. God has a sense of humor. Well, so first of all, I was led by my sponsor to get some recovery first. And that took some time. Some people in the room know my story. I was a really slow learner. Went to my first meeting at 20 and I didn't get clean till 35. So it was a rough road. I got abstinent a bunch of times. I just couldn't find the solution in the steps. I was busy doing other things. But thank God that story changed. And this is a part of that. This is a special place for me. So if anyone's new, welcome. If you're newly back, welcome back. You know, a friend of mine back in Detroit says this is where the dead live again. Yes. And what we mean by that is dead on the inside. You know, because there wasn't laughter and carrying on and all the stuff that we're doing here today where we came from. So how I stay from being complacent is I have a home group. It's by the book Tuesday night in Fraser, Michigan. I have a service position at that group. I still have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. We're currently writing out of the flat book again. We're in step one. And I sponsor guys, and I just keep showing up. And I've tried it the other way. It didn't work out so well. Thanks.
I'm an addict. My name is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
How do you commit back to the program after anonymity was broken, causing loss of job?
Damn, Jeff.
My experience with anonymity as it relates to being outside of the rooms is something that I had to challenge directly, and the way that I did that was I had to beat the messenger in delivering my story. I delivered it. So if anyone had a problem with my story, they could kick rocks. Now, in terms of after losing a job, I haven't experienced that, but what I would say is get up, shake it off, get back in the rooms, and start all over again and get a new job and get some tools in your toolbox to help you avoid those kinds of problems.
Okay. Howdy.
Howdy.
I'm Damon. I'm an addict.
Hey, Damon.
And I... Help me to surrender. Well... That's a good one. I don't know. I mean, you know, if I think about, you know, drugs and stuff, I can think, well, don't take them because they're bad and recovery is good. And, you know, that's a good summary of this entire program, if you'll think about it. But what I have more difficulty with is surrendering everything else. People, places, things, situations, everything else. I have to do that on a daily basis. And I have to, for me, it's been a process. You know, I got here as a small child and got clean, you know, like a month before my 18th birthday. And now I'm an old man. Not as old as these other fuckers up here, but pretty fucking old, you know. And what I've learned is that, one, I'm not in control of how my life turns out. I can show up every day. I can do the next right thing that I perceive in that moment as the next right thing based on applying these steps to my life, assuming I work these steps along the way and learn the lessons I must learn. And then that teaches me that I'm not in control of how things turn out. And it also teaches me that if I have some faith in a higher power and this program and this way of life and these people, that everything will turn out okay. It may not turn out the way I've put in my brain that I want it to turn out. I may have these fantasies and ideas of how I want to fix, manage, and control things to have a specific result. But I found that when I try to make those results, I have stress in life. But if I let all of that go and just let everything just unfold kind of naturally, things turn out okay. They don't turn out the way I planned them in my head, but that doesn't mean they don't turn out okay. I may begin in life and start in one place, and I may end up a completely different place, and my plan may have been something else entirely, but I've given up most of the planning because I see it as being pointless. And I embrace the pointlessness of my personal accomplishments. You know, I may think what I do in life matters, but I'm wrong. It does not. Not for me. Doesn't matter what I accomplish in life. If I didn't do it and I dropped dead, somebody else would do it. Eventually, whatever it needs doing. So I need not worry about it, and I don't have to be inflated about my own importance and just let all that go and enjoy this moment in life. And the only thing I perceive that even matters is that if I show as much kindness as possible to others, and that's what matters, that momentary interaction with others. In the big picture of things, seems to be the most important thing in my life at this juncture. When I look back, that's what's been actually important. I don't worry about stuff. People say that I'm Mr. Acceptance, but it's because I know that I'm not in control of how things turn out. You know, I just have to accept them as they show up as being just fine. And they are just fine. And I don't have to fix it. And it'll get better on its own. Don't worry about it. Just don't get high. Don't get high. And things will get better. Because if you get high, they usually will just get continually worse until you're dead or you hit some sort of bottom. And that seems really inconvenient. So I would stick with this recovery thing. If you find yourself in these rooms, because, you know, if you got here, there's a reason. You know, and maybe drugs aren't working for you. So hang in there. Look.
Oh, God.
Especially with this question.
I'm Ryan, I'm an addict. Hey, y'all. It says, my girlfriend relapsed. She is pregnant. What can I do? You're asking that question of the wrong person.
Get a vasectomy.
Huh?
Get a vasectomy.
JW said, get a vasectomy. Yeah, it's a little late for that. I liked everybody else's questions better than I like mine. I mean, God almighty. I guess practice some fucking acceptance. I ain't going to change that. You ain't going to change that. You know, y'all might together change that or not. I don't know. And there's all kind of moral and ethical quandaries tied up in that question. And it's all above my pay grade. I'm 100% sure of that. And that's a good place to be, too. It's above my pay grade. None of my business. I guess my best answer for that, when I have trouble coming up with an answer, and it's always been that way, is to ask God to give me what I need. Mm-hmm. And my experience has always been that I get it. You know, I do. And I may not see it coming, and I may not understand what it is when it gets here, but I get it. And that's never fails. And why do I have to go through all this emotional turmoil that I just went through to get to the answer, which is obvious as the hell to start with? I don't know. I never know. But I'm grateful to be here today and be here clean among all these august presences.
Your turn.
Well, you're hopping on there.
Nah, you can't.
I'm an addict named Lorraine.
Lorraine.
Oh gosh, what was your most difficult moment in recovery? Wow. Well, I've had several. I hope I don't cry, but I guess I was having problems with my husband. We weren't getting along very well, and you know, this is the first thing that comes to mind. I'm sure there was a lot of difficult times, but what happened was I didn't know what to do anymore. And I've always told my sponsors, when you're faced with a hard decision, to ask God to hit you over the head with a 2x4 and you'll get the answer. And that's always worked for me. So it came to a point after a couple of years of getting worse and worse. It was a Thursday night, and I asked God to help me make a decision, give me some clarity, and hit me over the head with a 2x4 so that I couldn't mistake what to do. And the next day, I heard him on the phone with another woman telling her that he loved her. And he left that day. And I was actually happy at the time. I was grateful for this other woman because something had to happen in our marriage. And then, about a week or two later, the grief sets in, and the pain and the sorrow and the anger and the mistrust and the betrayal and all that stuff happened. He came back with his tail between his legs. He made a mistake. And because of Narcotics Anonymous, I've learned forgiveness here. Oh, I didn't let him back right away. It took about 6 months of counseling. And so even I kept asking God for a sign. Give me a sign whether I should stay with this man or not. And I kept getting signs to stay with him, even until the last day before he moved in, 6 months later. Give me a sign, and I kept getting the sign. We're back together today. Vito, as you can figure out, is my husband. You know, I was married to somebody with 60 years clean who went all over the world telling people that it's an inside job, telling people that it's not okay to be physically clean and spiritually dirty, telling the whole world this and helping other people, and doing that was a big slap in the face to me. But because of Narcotics Anonymous, we learn forgiveness, and we know not to put people on pedestals, and that we are human no matter how much time we have, and we are capable of making mistakes and coming back and holding our head up. And it wasn't very easy for him to come back, because he left the area to another area, came back, and the two of us came into rooms, and people were saying, how could you take him back, and how could you do that to her? And we had to go through that, but we did. And you know, I try to turn everything that I learned here into a positive experience, because every challenge I've had in recovery has brought me closer to God. So when I'm going through something really difficult, I say, I can't wait to see what good can happen from this. And something always good happens. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Our name is Janice, and I'm an addict.
Janice.
I'm a grateful recovering addict. It's easy to say that. It says here, how to best be of service to NA. And I don't have a simple answer. I just know that in my experience, I just followed what I was taught I follow today what I was taught in my first 30 days. Don't use, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, and do service. Find a service commitment. And in my first home group, this was fresh out of treatment, they asked me to do the coffee. And I was like, okay. And they showed me, gave me the coffee pot, and I did it for 3 years, you know. And I don't know if any of you are like OCD or anything, you know, but I'd get there early, make the coffee, I'd make the Splenda in a fan, the Equal shaped in a fan. I was just a little crazy because I took it so seriously. And I don't know why. I was new. I didn't know anything, but I wanted to be a better person, you know, and they said this will help. And believe it or not, you know, it made me, you know, not miss a meeting, you know, be there, be early, do things for others. And that's all I've tried to do since then, you know, whether it's sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I was a GSR for like 10 years, and if you don't call that service, you know, at area. I don't know if y'all have heard that certain term, area circus, you know, it's kind of true. And so, yeah, it takes patience, tolerance. It builds your character. It builds your spirit, you know, because for me, it's important to be patient. It's important to be tolerant. It's important to be compassionate. And that's what I strive, you know, through service. So for me, that's the best way to do it, with a good spirit and a good heart. So thank you.
I'm Linda. I'm an addict.
Hi, Linda.
You know, one of the best things I was taught early on in recovery is, you know, it's my thoughts that determine whether or not I'm an addict, but it's my actions that determine whether I'm in recovery or not. And so I guess I'm still an addict, because all my mind's been thinking over there since I sat down is, I wonder what Damon would do if I just cut a big fart while I was But I guess I'll be in recovery and not do it. I am not reading this. Will you verify that I ain't fixing to read that?
No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you need to get a little.
You'd rather fart instead?
Yeah. Yeah. And I promise you don't want me to be your matchmaker. If you don't believe me, ask one of my sponsors. Okay, this says dealing with your best friend going back out. I have a little experience with that. When I first got clean, I was given a sponsor. And when she had 5 years clean, she went back out. And that, when she had 5 years clean, she went back out. And I had a few years clean, I think. And she wouldn't, I would try, she got put in jail, so I took her some cigarettes because she made sure I had cigarettes when I was in treatment. And you know, I would sit there and tell her the exact same things that she sat and told me when I first come into the room. And you know, I would go and visit her and I would pray for her, and I couldn't reach her. And I felt guilty for that for a long time. But today I know that I have nothing to feel guilty about. She knew the message. She lived the program for years. And it was direct consequences of her actions that did that. But on the night that I was picking up my 9-year medallion, within a 10-minute span, she hit a tree 100 miles an hour and died. You know, I picked up several medallions for her, but I've had several sponsees go back out, you know, that are dead now. I have a daughter in California that's out there right now. And although it's heartbreaking, it always hurts your heart. Today, through heartbreaking experience, I know that the only thing I can do for any of them is pray for them and keep my ass in this room being a shining example of NA and what this program can do for us. In case they ever come back, those ones that are relapsed or my daughter calls and wants to know how they can do something different. You know, we may be the only basic tech somebody ever sees.
Where's the bathroom?
They're right.
See, some of y'all still fucked up.
Oh, before I forget, my friend Bobby J is Jenny's husband. And he bought me a badge, and I fucking lost it.
We got it right.
So if anybody...
We got it right.
There's a new sheriff in town. Y'all better straighten your asses up.
All you got to do is ask.
Where's the bathroom? Who? What was that boy's name? Bobby? Hunter B. Who is the fuck? Who's Hunter B? Who's Hunter B?
Right on the spot.
Will you go out with me? That was a question. You got one too? What do you feel is the best way to carry the message? Well, the message is that any addict can stop using and find a new way to live. Me. I'm a shining example of that. I used to live and live to use. Had never heard of NA. I found a book in a Texas penitentiary by Commode called The Introductory Guide to Narcotics Anonymous. Now, if that ain't God or whatever, the cosmic, the source, for me to carry the message is to stay clean. No matter what. Now, I've had a bunch of crazy shit happen to me that was my own doing, according to my sponsor. I can trace everything that's happened to me my whole life pretty much by my choices. Now, there were some other people involved. I got bullied when I was a little bitty kid on the school bus. I didn't ask for that shit. But when I got big enough, started fighting back, guess what? I bullied some other folks. So the only thing I brought to NA was hurt. And y'all love me. I didn't love myself when I come here. The best way to carry the message is to hold your head up. Tell the disease to get fucked. Every time you pick up a key tag, fuck you, motherfucker. And then the next day, fuck you, motherfucker. And so on.
Wow. Addict named Tim.
Hey, Dan.
I'm going to take that one back home, JW. Yeah.
Spread it all over the world.
That's right, damn it. This is the only place where we call a toilet a commode. I got that one from my dad. He's from Coleman. So, what's a commode? I asked my mom when I was a kid, what is a commode?
Do you ever forget to treat yourself like a newcomer?
Wow. I hope and pray to God that I will always treat myself like a newcomer. You know, don't get it twisted. Everyone in this room can use again. I know I can. You know, and like JW said, I've done some dumb shit. I've done some dumb shit recently that I'm embarrassed about.
I did not know how to deal with pain that I was having, just like when I got here, you know. So I did some shit that wasn't cool, you know, and I get to pay for that and mend that. And so, you know, I was sitting here, I was reading a book last night before I went to sleep, and there was a line in it that jumped out. And I've been making notes in my phones for years at meetings and conventions and different books, and I read the literature, but I also read other stuff. And this book said that God comes to us disguised as ourselves. And I was like, holy moly. Wow. You know, I know by God's grace I'm standing here. And I know, like Janice was sharing, that it's the basics. You know, one of the greatest illusions I had in early recovery, that if I ever got clean, secondly, if I ever stayed clean, that somehow magically or mysteriously, that the illness would go away. Like, I mean, not that I wouldn't be an addict anymore, but just all the shit that plagued me my whole life wouldn't plague me anymore. And that's not true. All the same things that plagued me as a child, as a young adult, and as a, you know, an older man. And I don't know, I might be one of the youngsters on the stage here. But at least I feel like it. But what's different is the tools. You know, the tools to do something about it. So when I call them dumbass attacks. I have them fairly regular still. I used to have them perpetually, every single day, you know. And then another thing I call is unscheduled flights. I don't need a ticket, an airport, I just go, you know. And so for years I would have dumbass attacks and unscheduled flights, and I would end up in jail cells and treatment centers and, you know, dope dens and, you know, what do they call them now? Trap houses, right? We come up with all kinds of different terminology, don't we? You know, and... yeah, in spite of me and in spite of us, we're here, you know. And so I hope I keep the basics basic, because that's the freedom. Thank you.
Again, I'm an addict named Jeff. The question is, what are your thoughts on the 12 concepts? And what is the best avenue to study, understand, and practice those? So that's a complex question. I don't want to be intellectual about this. I want to try to keep it simple. But my thoughts on the 12 concepts, for one, is to keep it simple. To be open-minded, and if you don't understand any of the concepts, that you meet and speak with various addicts, perhaps starting with your sponsor. I'm old school. I came around in the 80s, although I didn't get clean until 2000. But I'm a firm believer in book studies and sponsorship families meeting and studying together. And even if you're not in a sponsorship family, gathering with others to study anything that you don't understand. So that would be the best avenue. And the same principles that we use to do the step working guide or study algebra in college and you're 47, it requires practice, repetition, And again, I'm going to go back to keeping it simple. I don't know if I answered that, but I pray that I did. Thank you.
Howdy. I'm Damon.
Howdy.
Let's see. How do you show yourself grace? Well, I don't know. I give myself kind of a break a lot. I know that. I mean, you know, I've been married 6 times, you know, practice is perfect, you know. I don't know. I'm human, just like y'all, and I'm apt to make all kinds of mistakes, and I just need to give myself a break. You know, sometimes stuff don't work out, and my best reaction to stuff not working out is to learn something from it and try to not do the same stuff over and over and over again. Now, I would love to say that I always learn from things and I don't do them over and over again, but that would not be accurate. So I tend to make the same mistake sometimes several times and have to learn the exact same lesson again. And I have to give myself a break that I'm not perfect. And as I get older, I have noticed that I forget everything. And I get to learn the same mistake over and again because I forgot that I already learned it. And, you know, that's just something you have to look forward to. It's kind of like when you wake up about 45 and you go, darn, my food looks fuzzy. I have to get glasses. It's kind of like that, you know. You know, I'm only human, and I'm not a bad person. People come in here, and sometimes they'll think, oh, I'm a bad person because I'm a drug addict. Well, no, you know, I'm not bad. I have this disease of addiction, and I tend to do crappy things. Not to say that I'm not responsible for those crappy things that I do, because I am. You know, I'm not going to get a break for that. I'm going to have to pay the consequences, but hopefully I will learn and make fewer of those mistakes. And I usually do. You know, I usually do. You know, it could have been worse. I could have got that 12 concepts question. Because, you know, those came about after I got clean, you know. After I'd been clean a long time, and I noticed, though, one parting word, I guess, would be that in giving myself some grace, I also should work on things. Because I have noticed that first 5 years of getting clean is really crucial to work through the steps and apply them to your life before things start to get better. Because I've noticed that after things get better, I just coast. You know, I don't learn hardly anything new, and I don't apply new things very much, and I just kind of coast. And that's okay, because it's enjoyable to coast. That means things aren't going wrong. But I don't learn a whole lot during this coasting period. And I don't know, I've been coasting a lot since my 30s, and it's been pretty good, you know, since then. And I don't know. It's kind of like that old joke, you know, where the kid goes to the hospital because the mom says, oh, he never speaks, he never speaks, he never speaks, you know. And then the kid goes, oh, I hurt my arm. And the goes, oh, you spoke. He goes, well, everything up to now has been kind of all right. So it's kind of like that. I don't know. Just give yourself a break. If you're worried that you've done something wrong and horrible and awful, well, just give yourself a break because, you know, you can't change it. It's over now. I mean, oh, we learned that, you know, from the speaker last night, which was great. That was good. I was like, damn, that's rough. So, you know, I'm grateful. So give yourself some grace and it'll be all right. Don't worry about it.
Well, I coasted during the first 5 years of my recovery and didn't get around to working the steps until about that time. So there's more than one way to skin that cat, too. Well, how does the disease manifest itself in my life today?
Well, you ain't got enough time for me to answer that question. I guarantee you.
Sex, food, money, spending money, obsessing about shit that I don't have, obsessing about shit that I do have that I wish I didn't have. I mean, it's the same shit that we bring in here with us. You know, I don't obsess about getting and using and finding ways and means to get more today. That has been lifted from me. But anything that remotely changes the way that I feel, that I like, there's going to be some obsession involved in it, you know, and I don't believe that obsession and compulsion are ever going to be lifted from me. You know, we have this, you're talking about sponsorship a while ago. I'm the only sumbitch I know that's got 36 years clean. It's got the same sponsor he started out with. And I don't know what the hell that means, but it means something to me. It means we can tolerate each other, I guess, you know. But, boy, I was going somewhere with that. And I forgot where the hell it was, you know. But it's good today as it's ever going to get. I love telling people that, and I get to tell it to myself. I believe that I have every defect of character that I walked in the door with. That's why I don't understand the sixth step, and I never have. Why should I become entirely ready to have God to do something that it ain't never going to do? But it's part of the directions, and I endeavor to follow it. My shortcomings have been greatly reduced. You know, I don't ask God to remove my defects. I become entirely ready to have it do that. But the shortcomings ain't ruling my life today like they once did. If I stay clean for 100 years, I ain't never going to be shortcoming free. That just ain't possible. I'm a human being. And the disease will continue to manifest itself in my life as long as I'm vertical and pumping air. And probably when I'm horizontal and pumping air, it'll still be manifesting itself too. But I don't know. That's all I got.
How long did it take you to work the steps, or what is the appropriate amount of time you should work them? Well, I don't believe in any shoulda, coulda, woulda, so I'll just give you my experience. I was so desperate when I got in here. I picked up so many white chips. I was 46 years old, and I just couldn't stay clean. I went out every Friday and picked up a white chip every Sunday and Monday. And people would say to me, NA doesn't have a revolving door. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. I even had a guy look at me and say, let me look at your face so I can remember you when you die. So by the time I was willing to surrender, because, you know, when I went to treatment, I came out, I didn't believe alcohol was a drug. And I kept little bottles of vodka in my drawer, so I would have a couple of swigs of that, and I was still picking up chips, thinking that I was clean. And when I had 60 days clean, I said, I'm going to go out and celebrate, and I called my dealer. And my daughter said, Mom, you just got 60 days. And I said, oh, I'll get it again. Well, I couldn't get it again. So in 1996, I was in detox 3 times. So when I finally went to detox for that last time, I couldn't stand myself anymore. I hated myself. I hated my life. I hated everything. And I just couldn't live like that anymore. And I just said, I'll do anything. I'll do anything it takes. If my sponsor tells me to stand in the corner on my head, I'll do it. So I did everything she told me to do, and we started with the first step. When I picked up my 1 year clean, I was on my 10th step. And that's just the way it was for me, because I just, you know, I went to Catholic school. You know, I was very disciplined before I started using, of course. And so when somebody told me to do something, I did it. So I did all that writing, and I did the steps, and I was just a worker that way. So for me, And that's kind of how I sponsor, you know, that's what worked for me. I don't sponsor people that don't want to work steps because I can't relate to that, and I can't, you know, they say there's a wrench for every nut in here. So, you know, I'm not that sponsor that's going to sit and say, well, that's okay, because that's how I help others. By working those first three steps, which is the foundation, I get them on those first three steps as soon as they can. 2 weeks on the first step, 2 weeks on the second step, 2 weeks on the third step, and then 2 weeks, tell me how you're applying those first three steps in your life every single day. Then I know you're ready for the fourth step. So when you call me for a problem, I ask you how you apply 1, 2, and 3. If I can't do that, and that's what was done for me, if I can't do that, then I really don't know how to help you with your problem, because until you can understand how powerless you are over the situation, identifying the problem in the first step, getting into the solution in the second step, doing something differently, doing the work, and giving it to God and not being attached to the outcome. So that's how I help others, and that's what I was taught. So for me, working the steps is a must from the very beginning. Thanks.
Sorry about that. It's
not crazy. Oh, God. I'm Janice again, a grateful recovering addict.
Hi, Janice.
This one's out of my field. How do you feel about energy drinks?
Don't you drink coffee?
I do. Well, I guess I can. My experience is coffee. I'm a coffee addict. Yes, I am. So I guess I can qualify for this question. Is it? I mean, it is. I guess to a point, mind and mood altering, right? I mean, I get a little energy in the morning. And I'm one of them people, I could drink coffee 10 o'clock at night and go to sleep. It doesn't keep me up. I mean, but Red Bull and all that stuff, I've never tried it. Like the vapes, I'm old. You know what they say, old dogs, they don't want to learn new tricks, you know? So I'm not experienced in the energy drinks and... just like with anything else, everybody has an opinion. I don't really have one on it, you know, because I don't drink them. So, but just to, to illustrate a little change, you know, when I was in prison, I got in trouble a lot in my first 12 years. Well, I got in trouble the whole time, but except towards the end. But I used to go to confinement a lot. They called it the hole, the box. And whenever I'd go in there, everybody in there, Billy's back, Janice is here, I don't know, and I yelling and screaming. It was like an insane asylum, and I'd walk down these stairs, and I'd go into this room, 6x8, with a toilet and a sink in the corner. You know, it's all in one, toilet and a sink. Great engineers. And a steel or a concrete slab with a plastic mattress and a plastic pillow and a dingy sheet. And there was a hole in the steel door that they open and bring your tray in the morning or take it out. And you know, I had to back up to this hole 3 times a week and get handcuffed and escorted to for a 10-minute shower down the hall, right? So at breakfast time, they gave us a little baby styrofoam cup of coffee. And my favorite officer worked on the breakfast shift, and I said, Miss Jackson, see if anybody's not drinking their coffee. Somebody don't want their... Billy wants to know if y'all anybody got an extra coffee. And she'd bring me an extra cup of coffee, a little baby. And I thought I had arrived. You know, I was like, I got this. You know, and I say that because for me, that's a screenshot of my disease. You know, the thinking, the sickness of it all, you know. And today, I always tell my friend, I have this fancy coffee grinder that I only buy beans. I don't buy ground coffee. That's beneath me. And lately I discovered what they call the most expensive coffee in the world. All right, it comes from Indonesia or something, and you know, they seen me coming, in other words. And this coffee costs $399 a pound.
Jesus
Christ. I love this coffee, and that's what... And you know, average Joe probably drinking and think, hey, this tastes like any other coffee. But to me, it's like the best coffee in the world. And I'm an addict. And I, you know, and I order it every month. And I'm crazy. And, you know, I just, I taste the nuances. And I, you know, all that crap. But yeah, that's my only energy drink. I love it. I love it. And that's what I'm going to do. So thank you for asking.
And I'm an addict. Says, how do you keep from losing your passion for NA? Keep doing what you've been doing. You know, there was a time when I had, I can't even remember now, I'm so old, I can't remember time, but it was probably when I had about 10 years, I don't know. And you know, like I was telling y'all, when I got here, them old staunch old timers that was here, you know, they really pumped this program into me. And so by the time I had about 10 years or so, I was known as the bitch of the meetings. But it wasn't so much that I was a bitch, it was all I knew to give you was what I got. And what I got had gotten me 10 years or however much it was, and that's all I knew to give you. You know, we didn't kiss ass back then like we do now. I'm just kidding, y'all. I'm just kidding. So all I knew to give them was what they gave me. But you know, I began to get to a point because, you know, I had worked some steps and tried to practice this program in my life, and I was getting some feelings and some compassion and some emotions, and it got to where that was really hurting my feelings when they'd say I was an old bitch. You know, so for about a year, I just quit fucking going to meetings. I don't have to go in there and get my feelings hurt. Hell. But, you know, it got to a point to where I was beginning to feel bad and sad and lonely and all that stuff, because as much as I hated them old bitches when I got here, I began to feel lonely with that and empty without them. You know, and I just thought, hey, I'll just go back. You know, I'll just go back and, you know, get me another sponsor and work some steps and do a 90 and 90, because that's what helped me when I first got here. And if you hadn't been here in a year, you know, it was kind of like coming back as a newcomer. So that's what I did. And got me a sponsor, and I started working some steps. And, you know, I don't know how long you got to stay clean before regular meeting attendance is not a requirement. But you know, I do every meeting my home group has. You know, and I do stuff like this, you know, and I'm on a service position with the area, you know, the convention committee, and I just keep doing it because, y'all, it's all I know to do. You know, when I had up to probably 7 years clean, if I had a headache that was going to knock my head through this wall, I wouldn't take a damn Tylenol for nothing. Because I was the kind of addict when I got here that I didn't know what pill it was that was going to get me, so by God, I wasn't taking none of them. You know, I had 3 surgeries by the time I had 10 years clean and would not take a pain pill for nothing. I'd lay in the bed and moan and groan and cry till I fell asleep, and I'd be a son of a bitch if I didn't turn over. So I'd cry and moan and groan till I fell asleep. But, you know, I don't know how else to do it. I mean, I'm a drug addict. Which drug is it that is going to get me? Well, as long as I keep going to meetings regularly, taking on service positions, trying to help newcomers, maybe it won't. Who knows? Maybe I can die clean. And that is my ultimate goal. I just want to die clean. Not sure where I'm going when I leave here,
but I don't want to go there fucked up.
I am not drunk. How has your relationship with the God of your understanding changed since you've been clean? Well, I didn't have a God of my understanding when I got clean. My first higher power was 105 convicts hollering the word, "Wee!" Every time they read the "How It Works," when they said the number, 105 men hollered, "Wee!" And we were in a room where there was the Bloods, the Crips, KKK, the AB. There was two Hispanic gangs represented. I never did learn their names. But anyway, in that room, everybody was hollering, "Wee!" I knew there was something special or something magical about that room, because on the yard they didn't holler "we." And I wasn't affiliated, so I just knew that there was something different happening in that room. And that was my first higher power. And then when I read the third step, it says God is, you understand him. That was way too Baptist for me, so I said, fuck that, I ain't gonna be able to do that either. And so I shared that in the meeting. I said, I'm struggling with the third step. And somebody said, "We'll use an acronym." I said, "I don't use no more, I'm clean." I've never done an acronym before. I know what a benzodiazepine is, but I don't know what a fucking acronym. Anyway, good orderly direction. They gave me that. And so every time I've had a struggle in this fellowship, somebody showed up, God, whatever you want to call it, and gave me around my limited way of looking at the source that's trying to help me. This program has given me a life I never dreamed possible. You can call it whatever you want to. I don't have to call it anything. See, it understands me. It understands everything I need before I ever even get there, because it's sitting there waiting on me whenever I show up. You know, somebody asked me, "What does it mean to take you under their wing?" And I said, "Well, they have your best interest at heart, hopefully." He says, "Well, what does that mean?" I said, "Well, you know, love is taking infinite delight in somebody else's well-being. And so y'all have shown me a way of loving each other I ain't never seen before." You know, my wife made me go apologize to Bobby, because she said I shamed him by saying he was fumble fucking around. He was fumble fucking around, but I shouldn't have said it that way. And, you know, she's my guide. Look, let me tell you about the energy drink. She'll ask you, I mean, she'll tell you, I drank one at a poker game one night, and goddamn, I was just over there going, "Deal the fucking card! Deal the fucking card!" Anyway, my relationship with God has changed tremendously. Today, I was taught to wish as a young child, okay? You got a birthday candle, guess what? You make a wish. But you ain't fucking tell nobody. How in the hell are you supposed to get what you want? You know what I'm saying? All right, and then they say, "Well, wish on a falling star." The fuck? I hope it don't hit me in the head or some shit. You know, none of that shit made sense to me. And then you get to NA and they're talking about hope. Well, Jim Carrey says, "Hope is but a beggar if it doesn't turn to faith." I got that from him. Today, all that is turned to trust.
whatever the fuck it is, I trust that. I trust this program. It ain't never let me down, not one time. Thank you.